Welcome to Show and Tell with the Two Mortgage Guys. We come to you live on Facebook and YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our Facebook pages every Tuesday at noon. Today, we're going to be talking about recent trends in the real estate market and what to expect in upcoming legislation sessions with Mark Fisher from IAR. Stick around.
Joining us today is Mark Fisher, CEO of the Indiana Association of Realtors. Mark serves as the CFO of the Indiana Association of Realtors, where he's responsible for implementing IAR's mission and service to 20,000 plus members in the Indiana real estate industry. Mark began his career at the Indy Chamber as a public policy intern and has served in various capacities, including the Director of Engagement, the Interim President of Develop Indy, through its merger with the Indy Chamber. A native of Bloomington, Indiana, Mark has a bachelor's degree in sociology, certificate in business, a minor in economics from Indiana University, Bloomington, and a master's of public affairs from the Indiana University, Indianapolis. Mark currently lives in the Butler-Tarkington neighborhood of Indianapolis with his wife and four children. He stays active in a variety of community-based initiatives, including Leadership Indianapolis, as well as serving as a member of the board for the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, Indigo, Midtown Indy, and LISC Indy. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
That was a lot. I didn't want to use that up. You got a lot of credentials.
Luckily, I dropped some of those boards when I came to the Indiana Association of Realtors. So I focus on my day job now.
Yeah, there you go. Nice resume. Yeah.
Well, we are excited to have you on the show. It's just nice to have somebody of your caliber, your level of involvement in the Real Estate Association. I'm sure you can provide all kinds of good stuff to the consumers, the people who live in the Indiana, realtors that follow the show. There's so much to talk about. We're going to cover all kinds of stuff today, but let's kind of lead off with something. Like, let's talk about what's happened really in the last 6 months, really the last year, with the government really kind of the Fed's push into raise these interest rates, trying to kind of slow down spending, you know, what impact that's had in the housing market. Right. And I know you're going to tell me that you can't make a prediction, and that's fine. Where do you see this heading, and what do you see coming?
Yeah. So I think it's really important to put the real estate, especially the real estate market, in perspective. I mean, 2021, and really the first half of 2022. So think of a 2-year period, it's kind of second half of 2020 to the first half of 2022. We're really frenetic markets. I mean, they're really anomalous markets. The impact of COVID and the demographic shifts as people moved from high cost locales, looking at, you know, being closer to family, other opportunities, not just on the coasts, people spending a lot more time in their homes. The whole work from home, people are now rethinking of their space needs. And we stopped spending money on experiences like travel, and we started spending money on goods. And so that really did drive up the demand for new homes and housing. And so really those 2 years are kind of anomalous. We want to think more about the 2019 as a normal year with normal trends. The inflation, of course, has been the headline news, the Fed ratcheting up rates very, very quickly, having a profound impact on mortgages and mortgage rates, as you know. But we are starting to see this slow down a little bit. The inflation in October came in at 7.7%, which was below what many economists and experts had expected. So it's also the lowest the headline inflation since January. So we are starting to see, when the Feds raise rates, that they're trying to slow things down. They've got this balance of trying not to send us into a recession, but they are having their intended impacts, and that's having a big impact on the real estate market, especially if you are a homeowner that is locked into a you know, sub 4% mortgage rate, you are less likely, or, you know, kind of more suspect of putting your house on the market to look at a different option, the increased cost that comes with it. But there are life events and people still have great opportunities and still find a lot of deals. But we are, you know, from a year to date, you know, July to September of we're down below, you know, down 10% where we were in 2021. We really saw kind of a really frenetic market through the first half. And then we started to see really bigger impacts in the second half of the year. So in October alone, sales were down about 23% for the month. But I think it's really important, as we say, you know, we need to make sure that we're telling the story of the Indiana real estate market and not kind of an outside influence and looking at what's happening. Right. So Indiana, while we're definitely entering into a different market, we're still doing better than the national averages. So while we are kind of this third quarter closed down 10% where we were in 2021, national averages were 20%. Where we were off in October, 23% sales down, national averages 30%. So, you know, we just need to make sure that we're telling the story of what is happening in the state of Indiana and then local markets, because as you know, real estate is so localized. What's happening in local markets across the state?
And that goes back to the same thing. It's sort of the trends, right, with some of the values and some of the properties in the sand states, you know, might escalate a little bit higher than what we see around here for Indiana. It seems that it's always been more mild with the movements and the values. And if you, like you said, the decline's down, but we're less than what it is nationally.
That's right. And we're not seeing, you know, the price drops that we've seen nationally, where, you know, U.S. home sales felt, you know, that we're down about 5% for price wise. And really, I think, while, you know, one of the things that we're going to try to address at the legislature is we have a long term inventory and supply challenge in Indiana. And while we might see a slowdown in the market, we've also seen really big drops in the inventory, people putting their house on the market. So this slowdown in the housing market isn't going to solve kind of our long-term challenges of inventory. And we need to continue to think about how do we prepare our state and our communities for an eventual economic rebound, and making sure that they're able to take advantage of economic development opportunities, new people that want to come and live in their communities. And so we can't take our eye off the ball of some of our long-term inventory challenges, because we really haven't built us at scale as a state since the you know, 2008-2009 Great Recession.
Right, because that's when really a lot of, when everything sort of happened or declined. But the same thing, it's like with the new home construction's not bounced back at the same percentage as growth in Americans and people moving into an area.
Yeah, and we you know, we're fortunate as a state of Indiana, because we're continuing to grow as a state. You know, most of our surrounding states are losing population, but we continue to grow, and so we need to make sure that we're preparing our communities, our state, for this continued growth and for an economic rebound, and making sure that we are looking at ways to address that long term inventory challenge. Because right now, you know, that even though sales have declined, inventory is off, new listings are down, but the prices haven't dropped as significantly because of that constrained inventory.
You know, we get that objection a lot with people that are maybe on the fence about buying, because they know the property values maybe peaked, right? And so they're thinking, oh, they're going to come down as much as they went up. But, you know, the reality is, property values shot up quite a bit in the last few years. And even though they've gone down a little bit, I don't think anyone anticipates them coming all the way back to where we were a few years ago. And like you said, we're not in one of these crazily overly inflated markets. We're not in a big, you know, mecca area of tons and tons of new growth. So
right. Even with a 5% drop in, you know, this month or the past quarter, we're still 12% over where we were in 2021. So that's not really sustainable. It's not sustainable. You know, these rapidly increasing housing prices, it's great if you own a home and you've built up that equity. You can then use that equity to purchase, you know, buy down a mortgage rate, or, you know, go into a different home. But it really locked out a lot of those first time home buyers. And our inventory is most constrained at that starter home level. And so, I think our members recognize that while they were, you know, it was a very competitive market, the ones that represented buyers were being locked out and they were losing a lot of bids and transactions because the competition was so stiff. And so, we need to make sure that we're providing, especially at that starter home level, that we are able to move people into home ownership opportunities. And that's really long term. That's an inventory. It's a supply and demand problem. We have a supply issue right now.
And it's not just us. This is, again, nationwide, right?
Without a doubt. Ours might be a little bit more acute because we are continuing to grow as a state. But we're also, we're not a Phoenix or a Boise who saw these really, these huge run-ups in their prices, and they're starting to see the biggest precipitous declines. We haven't seen the peaks or the valleys that some of these markets will, but we're not going to see the precipitous declines either, just because we have long-term inventory challenges.
Right. Which need to be addressed, like you said earlier, with economic development and bringing people into the state. If you're bringing in 2,000 jobs, you got to make sure there's, like you said, housing availability for these people.
That's right. And that's, my background is in economic development. Before I joined the realtors, I worked for an economic development corporation. And even those shifts, it used to be at the beginning of my career in economic development, it was all about tax climate, regulatory climate. Can I get, a warehouse of this many bays this close to the highway exit? And very quickly, the conversation shifted to talent. And it was all about workforce and talent. And you hear more and more economic development deals hinge on, if I invest in this community, will I be able to, what's the workforce watershed? Will I be able to meet my talent and workforce needs? And as our national economist at NAR says, no houses, no people, no jobs. And we have communities now, especially in some of our border state, border communities that have surrounding states saying, great, you're bringing this in economic development investment, but we're going to be selling houses over the border because we just don't have that. And then there are these fears that you bring in a job investment and you're going to bring in more people, and that's going to exacerbate an already tight housing market. So you start to see economic development professionals talk more and more about the importance of housing to long-term economic development strategies. The state of Indiana has the Indian Economic Development Corporation had a program called READY, which it's Regional Economic Acceleration and Development Initiative. And it was a grant program that the state had set aside $500 million and encouraged regions to come together to accelerate their economic development efforts around talent and innovation. And what you saw is a third of the dollars requested for this program were directly related to housing, that the communities are realizing that they need to increase housing stock. They need to look at their existing and future housing stock to make sure that they can continue to thrive as communities and take advantage of those opportunities that their economic development corporations are bringing to them.
Wow. Exactly. Hey, one thing when you were talking in that brought up, is the affordability factor that Indiana's normally always had against the rest of the United States. And then part of it's like with property taxes, even because we rank really, really low in it, like in the nationals of where property taxes and affordability to live at, which is another reason for bringing people in.
That's right. Long-term predictability and stability. We've made a very large public policy decision as a state when we enshrined the constitutional property tax caps into our state constitution, 1% for those homesteads, 2% for rentals, that we said there are so many socioeconomic benefits that come along with home ownership. A lot of correlation between educational attainment and earnings and public health, that home ownership is really the foundation for you know, a thriving community and families. So we want to promote home ownership, and we have these property tax caps. I think what you're seeing is because we now have a market-based systems for assessments, and we have some controls in place that the, you know, the state has put on controls at the local level to make sure that they can't see rapid increases in their budget when they see assessments go up. But with the market-based systems for assessments, we start to hear from local officials and legislators that, hey, they're starting to get calls about their assessments and what it can do to their tax bills. We at the realtors have worked very closely with our partners at the State House to make sure that we have accurate assessments. And so the assessment system isn't the issue. The issue is this kind of unsustainable pace of increase in the assessed valuation. And so we don't want the legislature to make tweaks or artificial caps to the assessments, because the assessments should reflect the market. But there are discussions of what can be done to kind of soften the impact of those rapidly rising assessments as a result of, again, where the market is. So it is still, I think we're number two. You know, you get these rankings and the methodology, but I think we rank second in the nation for property tax burden, and that's you know, due to the investment and the policy decisions we made, you know, in 2007, 2008.
Wow, yeah. That's awesome. Tell us about the Indiana Housing Task Force. What exactly, what is that?
So we work with our partners, Habitat for Humanity, the Builders Association, the Apartment Association, other organizations that started to recognize, again, our long-term challenges of inventory and the pressure that puts on prices. And why are we not building, and why have we not built at scale since the Great Recession? And so we worked with the General Assembly to create the Housing Task Force. It was made up of legislators from both parties, from the House and the Senate, and then really focused on making sure that the experts were at the table. So again, the Manufactured Housing Association, Apartment Association, the Realtors, the Builders, Habitat for Humanity, tenants' rights organizations, they all had a seat at the table to get a firm understanding of what's happening in the market. What are what are the causes? What are the barriers and those pinch points for developing housing? And how the state can play a role. The state has traditionally not played a huge role in kind of inducing the development of housing. They have some tools at their disposal. But we really had three meetings. One was very foundational. The second meeting started to get into some of the possible solutions. And the third meeting was to come together and approve a report. And that report is online. I think it's iga.in.gov. You can post that. There's resources on our website as well. But again, focused not on the programmatic side of rental assistance or the relationship between a landlord and the tenant, but really how can the state and all these experts around the table start to identify policies and the ways that the state legislature can play in promoting the development of new housing stock. And so the report's online. It was actually, I read all these, you know, State House reporters, and they said that this is the most productive study committee they've seen in a while, because yeah. We came in, we did our work, and then we made these recommendations. So I think that you'll start to see legislation introduced this upcoming legislative session. It is a budget session. The state's sitting on $6 billion in reserves. The legislature is often loath to create and fund things in perpetuity, but there is a sense that while we have a rainy day fund and we have long-term challenges, the state can play a more proactive role in helping communities. So we've got what we already talked about with the IEDC and the READY program, and there seems to be an appetite to fund that. How do we make sure that housing and home, you know, and is seen as a critical part of economic development? Do you provide special weighting to that? How do we tweak some of the tools, like a housing TIF, tax increment financing tool, that the legislature has created that local governments can use, but maybe has too many restrictions on it. And then it's really, how do you take some of that upfront risk and time involved with developing new housing subdivisions, new housing products? And a lot of that is around infrastructure. What role can the state play in helping communities extend their infrastructure? You cannot build housing until you have water and sewer. So how do you maybe create a revolving loan fund, a grant program to help communities kind of plot out these infrastructure investments? Broadband is another big issue, and especially in the rural communities, and to induce development. The reality is a lot of communities across the state saw their local builders go out of business after the Great Recession. And so you've got national builders that can build at scale, but some of the local builers just really have some tough, you know, it's a lot to bite off this uncertainty in time and cost. And so can communities be more proactive in addressing those infrastructure needs? Can we look at stuff where infrastructure already exists, but it's now a brownfield? And you know, can we clean up? Can we provide more funding to clean up former industrial sites and get them shovel ready, since the infrastructure already exists there, but get them shovel ready for more housing development? How can we add and tweak some some existing programs like historic rehabilitation tax credits? How do we create programs at the state level then leverage and pull down more dollars from federal programs? So there's just some of the things that we're looking at. We are a market-based and market-driven organization, but we realize that there are some market failures, and we need to be open to some solutions that help communities reinvent themselves, rethink their strategies, and make sure that they're developing housing stock that really complements and goes well with their economic and community development plans.
Right. It's that infrastructure. And then also, like you said, the economic development, like the state's always been really proactive with bringing jobs in. Fortunately for us up here in Howard County, you know, we got the approval on the battery plant.
That's so right.
That could be huge. But like you said, it could almost do something where they could do some type of a tax relief for developers to be able to put in the housing. Because once those new houses are built, then some of the existing homes will go back on the market for sale, which will help.
Thank you for mentioning that. That's a really good point. You know, we are advocating, we need inventory at all price points. Our challenge is much more acute at the sub $150,000 price point, that starter home. Even though we are in the business of selling and promoting home ownership, we also know that we need good rental and workforce housing. Good renters become good homeowners. And so we're not going to just stay in our lane, and say, hey, we can't think about or work on these other issues. We're gonna have to be open to this. But even though it's, you know, the biggest pressure is at $750,000 price point, the greatest way to create inventory below $150,000 or $200,000 homes is to create more inventory at the next level, so people can move up to that next house that meets their it's a growing family, or now they're working from home. And so a good way, you should also create some space when you create more inventory at other price points. So we're not sitting here saying we just need sub 150, but we need to create inventory at all levels.
Makes total sense. Hey, something totally unrelated to stats. I mean, you got to pick one. I mean, who's your absolute favorite realtor in the entire state? I'm joking. I wouldn't do that. Nobody came to your mind.
I love all my members.
I could have been
seriously. Don't know who I am.
Seriously though, Thanksgiving's around the corner. What's the biggest dessert you're just looking forward to at your house?
Oh, my grandma's pecan pie. By far.
Grandma's got to be really good.
Yeah, it's pecan, however you want to say it. That's my favorite of the desserts. Although I'm more of a savory guy. I'm looking forward to my mom's deviled eggs. Yeah. I usually fill up on the deviled eggs before we even get to the meal.
Right, exactly.
I put out a text thread to my family with, you know, kind of who's bringing what and what's still left over. And my niece said she would bring pumpkin pie, and then she modified it to some other dessert. And I'm like, well, just for clarification, who's bringing the pumpkin pie? Yes,
right. We gotta have that.
Right.
So gotta have that. Although the kids, I don't know if it's the texture. I don't know. My kids are into the pumpkin pie.
Is there anything else that you wanted to cover that we haven't asked you about? Anything that's, you know, our viewers need to know?
No, I just appreciate, you know, it's always, as one of our past presidents, Bernice Hellman, it's a good day to be a realtor. It's always a good time to buy a house. If you find the house of your dreams, you know, get into that house. Refinancing, as you guys know, refinancing options will come on down the line.
Right.
As they say, that marry the house and date the rate. And life events come up. And so, don't be afraid. Use your realtor. They're experts in their localized market. They're advisors. They know how to negotiate on your behalf. You know, so much of this kind of do it yourself. You know, when you're making the largest purchase, largest investment of your life, for the vast majority of us, buying a house is going to be the largest purchase we ever make. You want a trusted advisor there. And the value that a realtor brings, you know, I've bought and sold houses. It's a lot of it's peace of mind, right? It's
right.
Play part counselor, part advisor, part, you know, they know their markets and they know what they're doing, and they're great advocates on your behalf.
Well said.
Awesome. Well, good. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Like this, just like, if you got comments, put them on there. We'll make sure Mark gets them, and then make sure you share this, and stay tuned. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
All right. Next week, we're going to be talking with Christy Hitchcock. She's a realtor with the Key Team at the Hardy Group. Christy's going to be sharing the do's and don'ts if you're thinking about selling your home, what things make a difference on value and presentation, what things are only going to cost you time and money. Be sure to tune in next Tuesday at noon. We'll see you next week.